WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Major wildfires are burning on both coasts of the U.S. New Jersey Forest Fire Service Chief Bill Donnelly is on the fire lines in Passaic County.
Make no mistake, though precipitation is forecasted, that's not going to solve the problem that we have here with this wildfire. It's inevitable that this fire is going to continue to burn up until it reaches our control lines.
Wildfires are also burning in New York. Firefighters in Southern California are gaining ground on the destructive mountain wildfire. CBS News Los Angeles reporter Lauren Posen is talking to people there.
Rafael Frankie says he and his wife left with just the clothes on their backs and their dog as the flames inched closer to their home.
That's something you work on. I worked all my life on. That's kind of a retirement stage that you're preparing, my wife and myself, and everything goes in smoke.
President-elect Donald Trump is assembling his team. CBS's Robert Costa spoke with him.
He alone, more than any other aide, is evaluating the personnel and possibilities around him. And he reflected in one of our conversations about how he sees his mandate, that he has a movement and a base and now a party that's fully behind him. And he wants to make sure that anyone who comes on board has his same vision for that mandate and for his perceived level of support.
New numbers show Trump has won Arizona. Trump will meet with President Biden on Wednesday. Among the topics, Ukraine. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on CBS's Face the Nation.
President Biden will make the case that we do need ongoing resources for Ukraine beyond the end of his term, because the threat to Ukraine will remain no matter what exactly happens on the battlefield or at the negotiating table, and the United States should not walk away from its commitment.
At least one person is dead after a shooting at Tuskegee University in Alabama.
Get down. Oh, my gosh.
Get down.
Video was posted on X. The campus was celebrating its 100th homecoming. Thousands of fans came to the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati as the family of the late Pete Rose hosted a memorial visitation for the hit king. Chloe Markley reports.
Visitors made their way down the red carpet that led them to Rose's Reds Hall of Fame induction jacket, his jersey, and his family. Many fans saying Rose was their childhood hero, reminiscing on their favorite memories of him.
When he got the record-breaking hit.
He's Mr. Baseball, you know. I mean, it's not just the sound. He embodied baseball and how it should be played.
Rose was known as Charlie Hustle for his passion of the game. Rose died at the end of September. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. New CDC data shows 3 out of every 4 high school students across the country say they've experienced at least one adverse childhood event. That can include violence in the home, parents separating, and any kind of abuse. Scientists are learning that these events can be connected to substance use disorders and even chronic illness or autoimmune problems. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
Research shows these experiences, called ACEs, can alter a child's brain chemistry and produce a prolonged, sometimes lifelong, toxic stress response. Licensed psychologist and member of Kentucky's Bounce Coalition, Joe Barjone.
We're seeing some of the same kinds of patterns, that increased sense of loneliness, isolation in our youth, increased levels of suicide ideation, exposure to violence, exposure to adverse childhood experiences.
Experiencing at least one ACE as a child is linked to having alcohol and substance use problems as an adult, as well as chronic diseases such as diabetes and obesity. Childhood trauma costs states. According to the National Governors Association, adults with ACEs can lead to billions of dollars in healthcare costs and lost productivity. Barjone adds, schools can help address the youth and mental health crisis by cultivating a sense of belonging and connectedness, as well as increasing suicide prevention programs.
Promoting mental health awareness, teaching kids around social-emotional learning and dealing with their emotions in an effective way, increase mental health services.
The most recent data from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services is only from 2018 to 19.
but it shows nearly 40% of Wisconsin kids had at least one adverse childhood experience. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction has its Trauma Sensitive Schools Initiative, which helps educators help kids in public school districts. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, breezy with a low around 36. Sunny mid-40s for Monday, still breezy. Clear skies and a chilly low in the upper 20s for Monday night. For Tuesday, sunshine, highs around 48. Rain is likely on Wednesday with highs near 50.
Right now, it's 49.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, is in the host chair for The Maggie Dawn Show.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll hear from the Dom Salvia Show, along with co-host for the day, Jim Santel. Together, they try and piece together the multiple legal cases pending against President-elect Donald Trump, and if any of them will have an effect going forward.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney at the table with me. Jess P.S. on the boards. Callers, be patient. We will get you. I want to get Jim's opinion on the status of some of these civil and criminal cases that are pending against the former and soon-to-be President Donald Trump.
It is tough to say out loud, isn't it? Right, right.
I don't think I've said it out loud yet.
It's a passage, Jess. It's a passage.
I've written it. I haven't said it out loud yet.
Do we have to call him? We don't have to call him that. We can call him like a rapist or something, can't we?
We can use accurate titles, so yes.
We can call him a convicted felon.
There we go.
Yeah.
WMDX Texter 920. Is it disrespectful to address Donald Trump as the future first felon in chief?
There's legal support for that for doing just that, right? And there's a point, if I can use that good text as a springboard. It is a stunning thing to say it out loud, Jess, but in 19 days from now, the president-elect of the United States of America is going to be appearing in a Manhattan court to be sentenced by a criminal judge for 34 counts of violations of the criminal law in New York. That's going to happen. Unless Juan Merchan, in which case I'm going to be all over the criticism of him, right? Unless Juan Merchan, and he should not. And I hope that he does not postpone this further. He's done it twice already. But absent that, Juan Merchan needs to go ahead and sentence the president-elect of the United States of America for the crimes that he committed against the people of the state of New York. Isn't that a stunning thing to say out loud?
It really is.
He will not be sending Donald Trump to jail so he can't attend.
But he could.
He could.
Okay, he could.
He could.
So I am now saying, Juan Merchan, if you do sentence him to jail, you should send him right then and there.
Exactly. He can order that. What will happen, of course, is his attorneys will run immediately to the appeals court and ask for a stay of that. Chances are the appeals court will
grant
that stay.
Do it on a Friday. Make him cool his heels over the weekend. Right. You know, you get him out on Monday. Right. Sorry, so we're closed. It's a holiday.
You're thinking like somebody who knows the system well, Dom, right? Exactly.
understand.
But appeals court will almost certainly stay that because there will be some issues about the trial itself. And beyond that, assuming that Juan Merchan does not stay it, this goes up on appeal. And so it'll be several years before that will be completely adjudicated. The significant thing about that, of course, is the state case. By the way, Juan Merchan sometime next week is also going to issue his own order on whether or not that Supreme Court immunity ruling requires him to get rid of the case. Again, prediction here, he will not buy into that theory, but that may be as soon as next week. So something to talk about when we get together then.
All right.
But assuming that Juan Merchan does what he should now do to bring this thing to a close in the district court, it'll be pending out there for a while, but again, wouldn't it be stunning?
Okay, so the other one would be the state case. We're talking about the state case in Georgia. Fani Willis, still, I guess, ultimately on appeal, whether or not she can actually remain on the case. I mean, this thing's in its infancy yet, this RICO case. There's a lot of other folks indicted with him in this RICO case, so how does that flush out?
Sure. So right now, again, exactly that, Dom, the decision of Scott McAfee was the state court judge there. Yeah. He's the one who said, you know what, I don't like what you did, Fani. This looks kind of bad, but it's not a conflict of interest, so stay on the case. Donald Trump and others among that great number of defendants in that RICO case, sweeping case, appeal that to the appeals court there. That's where it's pending right now. That case, also a state case, not subject to Donald Trump's getting rid of it somehow. How through the Department of Justice. There's another thing we should talk about, though, in connection with all of that. But that can also, that'll also be subject to some resolution probably late this year, maybe early next year by the appeals court there in Georgia. Almost certainly, I like to think, saying that the Scott McAfee's decision, which was, again, well thought out, that stands. She can stay on the case. She also, may recall, appealed Scott McAfee's dismissal of some counts. Remember this? And that's also pending. So we're going to get a couple of things coming out of the appeals court there. Again, a state case. And again, it could proceed in sometime into 2025. The footnote that I've sort of hinted at before is just this. When it comes to prosecutions and certainly sentencings, those kinds of things, even in the federal system, there's sort of a doctrine inside the Department of Justice says we don't prosecute sitting presidents. Doesn't directly apply to state prosecutions, but you know well that defense counsel will raise that issue and attempt to stop that prosecution in Georgia from going ahead while Donald Trump is the incumbent in the White House. There is also a notion out there that if the state of Georgia, for example, were somehow to sentence him during the course of his term and literally send people out there to get him in the handcuffs, that might be, again, think about this. It's never been tested. We don't do this, but I haven't done this before, that because that would be some state action, effectively overcoming the, forgive me for describing it this way, the will of the remaining states, the will of the people, and basically stopping a president from doing what he's supposed to do, that you would have to stay, that is, postpone any, again, execution of that state case until after he leaves the White House. And again, all that, that's all theory. Nobody has ever tested that. It's not been before the Supreme Court. There is a non-frivolous argument about the notion that a single state prosecution should not overcome the decision by the American public to put somebody in the White House. That's a national federal decision. And again,
states' rights, baby. What are you talking about, man?
That's the argument, right?
It's so bad. Too bad you voted for a felon who tried to overthrow the government. The people of Georgia were harmed by this.
Right. People of New York were harmed by something as well. So you've got those arguments out there. It is the kind of thing that, again, could animate our discussions, my friend, well into 2025 as we think about all of these things we never had to think about for presidents who are not subject to criminal prosecutions in state courts. This is unprecedented in American history.
I can't wait to be president. It's going to be great. James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Okay, let's get to the federal cases then. Of course, the documents case, the mother lode, the secret documents that Trump hoarded as the billionaire hoards in his house, even after swearing or notifying or testifying or writing that, oh, we gave everything back, it's all fine. That case, the Jack Smith case, and of course also Tanya Chutkan on the D.C. insurrection case. The headlines I'm seeing, Jim, says looks like Smith's getting ready to pack his bags.
He's packing up, apparently, and we don't know if that's absolutely certain. The status of the documents case, of course, is that you've got Eileen Cannon, who could be on a short list either for Attorney General or maybe a next Supreme Court spot.
God,
think about that just to make yourself feel good about your nation here. She has dismissed that case entirely on the unfounded, again, unprecedented notion that Jack Smith didn't have authority. Clarence Thomas is the only person who's bought into that crazy theory. It's up before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. They will almost certainly reverse her. And I would offer to you, Dom, that it's important that they do that for a couple of reasons. One is you don't want that precedent out there that you can get rid of a special counsel, special prosecutor like this. It's important for the department to establish that as a moving and active theory out there. And then you also, for reasons just beyond that theory, you want to send a message about Eileen Cannon. She's done it again. She is out there alone. And the 11th Circuit, which is not exactly a liberal circuit, not as conservative as the 5th Circuit is, but 11th Circuit coming back and once again telling her, Eileen, you're wrong about this. And maybe in some way that dampens some spirit about her next job employment, maybe in Washington. But all those things, they're still out there. The issue that you just raised is just this, and that is the Department of Justice has this, again, not, it's not in stone, it's not legislative, it's not constitutional, that you can't prosecute a sitting president. Donald Trump right now is not sitting. And so maybe there's some thought that Jack Smith with Merrick Garland are going to say, let's dismiss this now and bring this to an end.
No!
My own advocacy is, you know what? Let's go with the Tanya Chutkan approach. Let's move full speed ahead. Tanya, issue your order. 11th Circuit, issue your order. And if it's going to happen, let's have Donald Trump, law and order guy, be the one through his attorney general who says, I want those cases dismissed. Let him do that. Let the American people hear that their president is reaching down Pennsylvania Avenue and telling an attorney general to dismiss indictments that were legitimately returned by 26 people in grand juries, finding probable cause that there were crimes committed by this president. Let Donald Trump do that. Let's not do that on Merrick Garland's watch.
Just 2 minutes left in the segment, Jim. What happens to the evidence, grand jury testimony, all the things in these cases? Do we ever get to see any of it?
You might. Again, you as a member of the media could petition for some of those things. Much of it otherwise would have been a part of the public domain if any of these things had gone to trial. Again, the Georgia case may still be tried at some point, but it will remain there. And certainly at some point, even historians may say, you know what, time has passed. I can now make a petition to the court, grand jury materials, release this as a part of the general informational interest of the American people. You believe you can get it.
The Georgia case, even if it was stalled or delayed because Trump is president, what happens to his co-conspirators in the RICO case?
Right, and there's the other interesting issue we haven't resolved, right? Probably should go ahead with them. And Scott McAfee, again, assuming that the appeals court lets Fannie Willis go ahead, he's got this back, and he may say, you know what, I'm bifurcating, there's your legal word for the afternoon, I'm bifurcating this trial. Donald Trump, he's in the White House, we're not trying him, but everybody else, pull out your calendars. Let's schedule this on for trial. They are not subject to those kinds of immunity doctrines. At least that's not what Scott McAfee is, right?
And his co-conspirators would not be eligible for a presidential pardon.
That's exactly right. That's exactly. State case once again. And so a lot of people there still are not looking at this election as being the get-out-of-jail-free card.
You lay with the dogs, you get the fleas. Folks, this is the Dom Salvi Show. That is James Santel, Jess P.S. on the board. Come back. Take some of your calls, 855-752-4842.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Okay, team, I'm going to level with you. The economy's looking pretty We need everyone to put on their thinking caps. Our digital marketing is flattening out. Every time we get successful with the right keywords, the costs are becoming astronomical. And our CPMs are going through the roof and conversion rates are tanking. Now, how are we going to stand out from our competitors when we're all doing the same thing? Bob?
Well, boss, one thing I enjoy doing is listening to podcasts and radio.
Maybe we can use one of those hosts to talk about our products and drive more customers online. Radioactive Media made brands from Squatty Potty, Dr. Marty's Pets, Phone Soap, and more. They can match us with the right influencer and get a ROAS as high as 5-1.
Get a free analysis and receive $1,000 credit towards your first national campaign by going to radioactivemedia.com or text the word radio to 511-511. Discover how audio marketing can surpass your current strategies with new and innovative ways that sound better. Go to radioactivemedia.com or text radio to 511-511 today.
Terms, conditions, message, and data rates may apply.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from Mino and the mayor out of Green Bay. This week, Jim and John spoke with Tim Cody from the Fox Valley Veterans Council about what they provide for servicemen and women, as well as one of the most significant issues facing veterans in the Fox Valley, homelessness.
Sometimes when I'm falling, flying, tumbling in turmoil, I say, whoa, so this is what she means. She means we're bouncing into Graceland. And I see.
Hey, welcome back. Tim Cody, Fox Valley Veterans Council, joining us today to talk about our Veterans Day event. And boy, you and Jim speak the same language. Every day, you guys try to find a way to help people have a roof over their heads. And I'm not trying to make that sound melodramatic, but it's the truth. You guys are the difference between having a roof over your head or literally sleeping in that that doorway over there sometimes.
We need to work them out of homelessness. That's what our program is. I mean, we're not a shelter place, food, and it's like, look, when you come to our place, it's like you want to leave that behind you. But it's hard. Everybody says, how the staff works so hard where I work. And we do, but the residents work a lot harder than we do because they're getting a new life. That's why it's called New Community. Do you work the programs? I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on you. These utility bills come, or these unbelievable rent things come, or these medical bills come, and they say, look, you know, we're done. We're taking you down. You come in and kind of would rescue or save be the right word?
I would think.
Buffer. You know, I think of it like I'm holding them up, so they can hang on to that window and pull themselves back through. And I'm giving that. I'm holding them to that point. So
you don't want you guys to be the end all for these people,
right? Right. Well, and I can't afford that. Right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I can't afford that. Right. You know, the charity can't afford that right now. So we are a temporary emergency,
all right.
Assistance. So that's what we do. And the other thing, and I want to put a plug in for you guys to always, you know, say, I'm doing this. I'm not doing this. My caseworkers are doing this. You know, I'm the guy who's out there begging for money and talking to you guys and doing stuff like that.
Right.
I've got five volunteer caseworkers, and I have a case manager. The five caseworkers are volunteers. They do it on their own.
Wow.
And then the case manager is a paid employee. And I also have a community engagement manager who also does a lot of work with the veterans. I take some of the phone calls when I'm there and everything else, but I try to focus on, you know, raising the money and doing all that stuff to keep the program going. And those folks are just absolutely, you know, fabulous in what they do. And it's just, you know, there are certain things that can be done. What we notice is there's just that gap when those people are getting ready to fall into complete homelessness or just total emergency. There was no net right there for that to stop right. To catch him for that.
Yeah.
And so that's why we filled that. We filled that
like
spot.
Final step between.
Right. Yeah. And so our job is to stop them from making that fall down the precipice.
But okay. So if we're talking about housing is the main thing, medical bills, like how can we get ahead of this? Because I think I just want to tell you from some experience I've had, you've got to read your mail. And if you don't like a bill, you got to call them. And there's a lot of people who will help.
That sounds like a pretty basic thing, but you say that is a legitimate problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are lots of reasons for folks that are in there. Some of it's beyond their control. Some of it is within their control. We're there to help them so that they can start thinking more clearly and understand what's in their control and what they can do to better their lives, right? what are the small things you can do to get where you are? So, yeah, it's, you know, hey, return your phone calls, answer your mail. You know, even when we're trying to assist them, you know, trying to get some of them to just give us the basic documentation is difficult sometimes. Not always, not for every one of them, but, you know, there's no cookie cutter for any of these folks. And it depends. Sometimes medical bills have put them into it. Sometimes it's been substance abuse. Sometimes, you know, it's been a death. And I mean, you just never know what can send somebody into kind of a almost a dysfunctioning type of position.
I will say this for the people I dealt with at the village we worked together with helping them. A lot of them got into whatever you want to call it, alcohol, drugs, whatever. And they were married. And the wife just basically said, nope, I'm not going to deal with this. And so she leaves, and she might have been the anchor for the whatever. And then they're on their own, which only leads to more substance issues to the point, and you, all three of us have dealt with this, where they're rock bottom, and they come to us or whomever to help them from there. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tim? And Jim, wouldn't you agree that happens a lot of times?
It's usually a change in circumstances,
right?
Whether it's your spouse or a best buddy, or you had a job and now that's gone, or, physically all of a sudden you can't do something that brought you happiness and kept you in a good place,
exactly.
Right? Now all of a sudden you're not in that good place, and that can just start to tumble you down.
And spirals.
You know, when you say, don't open the mail, why aren't they opening the mail? Because they're scared of what's in the mail.
It's bad news.
And so it's bad news. And so they avoid it. Avoidance is it's a human trait. Hey, if I turn my eyes, look away, it's not there yet. And if it's not going to be there immediately, that sometimes is their way of dealing with it, which is a wrong way to deal with it. But, I mean, that we need to understand why that's happening.
It's the worst way to deal with it.
You know, we don't understand why that's the way that happens. So we try to understand why what's happening, getting them help, but also getting them to go, hey, I have to take responsibility for some of where I'm at, right? And get them the help to do that.
But it's so important. You're trying to help them with this through this window, but that they have a little safety net for at least 30 days, because if it's all piling on, they're not thinking clearly.
Correct.
And then you make some bad decisions on top of other bad decisions,
right.
And then that's really bad. So we just really believe that, you know, we're in the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, that you really have to have safe shelter and food. And then you can start at least, okay, now I can make some decisions. But they have to have that safety is...
Also the pride factor of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting help.
Right.
And I think people need to be okay with that. There's nothing wrong with that. We live in a very tough world at times. And but if you can get that safety, that shelter, that you're safe, you're okay right now. Nothing's going to happen to you. We had a guy in here, Tim, that was homeless guy sleeping behind the police station.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was afraid to be getting beat up.
This guy was about like 6'2", 260 pounds.
He was.
Big time. The last guy in the world I want to tangle with.
Right.
And he said he was scared to death every time he'd go to sleep because what could happen to him on the street. So he slept next to the police station, and they would roust him, of course, but he just felt safer there.
Sure.
So can you imagine? Like I told Jim, I said, I go for walks on Sunday mornings around here. You see these ladies sleeping in doorways on a Sunday morning here. My God, I can't even imagine how scary that would be.
So what kind of decisions are they going to make?
Yeah, I mean, when you're at that point, you're really at the bottom. You're looking for, you're scrounging for food. You're looking to keep yourself safe. You know?
Are your headphones too loud?
No.
Okay. I see you taking them out. I didn't know.
Yeah,
that's a good term.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. All right.
We try to keep them from that point.
Right. Yeah, I
understand. We try to stop before they get to there. And if they're there, we try to at least pull them out. So, you know, we can do some hotels for a while. We can do some stuff like that. But,
we're going to send a break. I want to bring up a point because I've been asked this question, and I'm not even exaggerating, probably 100 times, literally 100 times. Why are so many vets homeless? And what I try to tell people, if there was like homeless lawyers, homeless, you know, factory workers, it'd be the same type of thing,
right?
But at least there's organizations that have picked one entity to try to help, and that's the vets. I want to get on that because I get that question all the time. Quick break. Back after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
CBS News Brief. Crews are battling several wildfires in New Jersey. State Fire Chief Bill Donnelly is on the fire lines of one that's burning along the border with New York.
Currently, the fire is 2,500 acres. We have 0% containment.
President-elect Donald Trump is assembling his team. CBS's Bradley Blackburn on what to expect.
While some presidents have formed cabinets that are teams of rivals bringing in their former opponents, Trump may favor loyalists.
Trump says he wants to cut aid to Ukraine and bring a quick end to the war when he takes office. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan tells CBS's Face the Nation.
It should be up to Ukraine to decide for its own sovereignty and its own territorial integrity when and how it goes to the negotiating table. It should be up to the United States and a coalition of nations that we have built to continue to supply Ukraine with the means to defend itself against brutal Russian aggression.
CBS News Brief, I'm Heather Bosch.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
A bye week for football fans. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. No football this weekend in Wisconsin. Both the Badgers and the Packers have a bye week. Up next, Wisconsin hosts number one ranked Oregon. Head coach Luke Fickell on the Badgers' strategy.
You know, the whole idea, get it to the fourth quarter and put ourselves in a position where we feel like we can excel and execute in the fourth. Make sure that we got to go back to what it is that we do and continue to climb this mountain to get better.
The Packers making a surprise move this week, trading veteran Preston Smith to the Steelers for a seventh round pick. And it turns out Smith requested the trade. He explained why.
We switched to a 4-3 due to the new coordinator, but to be honest, a few weeks ago I requested a trade. I didn't feel like I was being useful in the system, and it wasn't catering to my play style. And moving forward, like I wasn't surprised when I got the call. I got what I asked for, and I'm at a great place with some great teammates. I'm excited for the new start, and I'm excited for the rest of this journey for this season.
That's now Steelers linebacker Preston Smith. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, breezy with a low around 36. Sunny mid-40s for Monday, still breezy. Clear skies and a chilly low in the upper 20s for Monday night. For Tuesday, sunshine, highs around 48. Rain is likely on Wednesday with highs near 50.
Right now, it's 49.
Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. It's worth a look. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane power generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot.
Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert, the ear,
right?
Yeah, that was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like
right, lean left, straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else.
Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we continue looking for California guy Eric Hovde, and we'll hear from Mr. Global Matt Randolph, oil and gas expert. He's fantastic. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. Next up, we'll hear from Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Pat was joined by Kate Duffy, one of the founders of Motherhood for Good, to get her take on the results of the election and what the organization will do in response.
Boy, this works. Or bourbon, or your beverage of choice. And for some folks, it's champagne. It's a victory day for them. It's the day after the election across Wisconsin. This is a continuing coverage from Up North News, and Wisconsin Decides 2024 on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have been looking back at results. We'll catch up on some of those close races for state assembly, some of your own reaction to the election as well. But Tanya Atkinson here is with us here, president of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, to talk more about, again, both the results and where we go from here. Tanya, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Pat and Todd. Good to see you.
It's good to see you as well. We've discussed at length Dr. Kristen Lierley's run for Congress coming up short. The concern that she expressed for the women in her area, especially her patients. We talked about my wife, also an OBGYN, and again, the concern that she has for her patients and women around, you know, Northwest Wisconsin. And I would imagine that you can second and third those remarks and add any other reaction you like to the results that we've seen today across the state and around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously the loss, especially of the presidency, you know, hits us all really hard. We've seen, you know, what their agenda is, you know, in Project 2025. We've seen the impact across the country in states like Texas when abortion is, you know, is banned. That should be a huge concern for all Americans. You know, at the same time, it doesn't change the fact that Wisconsinites and Americans in general overwhelmingly support access to abortion and reproductive rights. So, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of people in Wisconsin and across the country that are going to be unrelenting in fighting for reproductive health access. And I'm sure we'll touch on this a little bit. And we made some pretty significant gains in the state legislature, which is significant to, you know, to advancing the agenda to continue protecting access in Wisconsin in the immediate and expanding that access where we're able. So how everything plays out obviously is unknown.
Let's talk about that public support, the public majority support for abortion rights, because I don't want people to look at what happened in Florida last night and think that this was some kind of a break in that narrative. It is still very much there, but an effort to protect constitutional abortion care rights fell short. But with 57% of the vote, it didn't get the 60% required by law there to pass. But as far as I'm concerned, we're proving yet again across this country, we know where women and their allies stand.
Right. I mean, 57% in Florida is huge. And that is a very, very strong message. It's very clear. Not too long ago, a Gallup poll came out, 80% of Americans, regardless of their own complicated feelings about abortion, understand why it needs to be safe and legal and accessible. Americans, Wisconsinites understand how complicated pregnancy is, and that at no point in a pregnancy is a politician more qualified to make healthcare decisions than the pregnant woman themselves. So people really get it. And I'm glad that you lifted that up, because this is still a real concern that people are absolutely taking action on in a number of ways, including 57% of people in Florida.
Tanya, I just wanted to ask for a second and come at this. I mean, here's, you know, Pat's a straight white dude. I'm a white gay dude. I want to take a look at this from a woman's perspective, because I think about this young woman, Lauren, who turned 18 on Sunday, and she went to vote yesterday for the first time for Vice President Harris. We had her on our show. I think about my two nieces. I think about those young women who were meeting Vice President Harris in tears, saying they were scared. What, speak to women in this audience this morning who are waking up. This is not just an election result. They have real fears about the implications on their health and on their lives. What would you say to them in terms of what still remains legal in the state of Wisconsin and access and what Planned Parenthood does for them?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And I think first it's important to acknowledge, you know, people's fears. That is real. And we, you know, the fact that somebody who just turned 18, who showed up at the polls, voted right away, understood the consequences of this election. That's how movements are made. And while, you know, while the threats are absolutely real, what is also real is that there are people like that young voter who are now part of this movement. And like I said, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin had plans in either scenario, and all of those plans involve people continuing to get involved and building on these victories that we've seen at the local level. That's absolutely critical. I mean, that's the quickest impact we see is what happens in our state legislature with regard to our restrictions. And so so with this new legislative makeup, we have got to hold them accountable to ensuring that we are protecting access to abortion, protecting access to that care, not only protecting it, but holding them accountable to expanding it. Like, we need to get the politics out of sexual and reproductive health altogether and make it an expected public health investment. And that is the unrelenting fight that we need that young voter to be a part of, and you know, and folks across the state. And I would also add, Todd, that this is not a gender-based issue. Certainly, you know, it's women's bodies that, you know, are sort of at the center of this decision making. And at the same time, this is not just a woman's issue. If we think about the horrible stories that we're hearing from Texas, where you know, couples, a woman is forced to sit in a parking lot in excruciating circumstances, and their partners also are part of this, you know, watching helplessly, you know, as their partner is suffering because they can't get treated because of abortion law. So it's really critical that that we all understand that it is not certainly it's you know, often women's bodies that we're talking about, but this impacts all of us.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you as well about besides abortion rights and abortion care overall, when it comes to health care, and especially for women. One of the notes that I've seen is that this is where the right needs to put its money where its mouth is. More needs to be done for women to help them carry babies to term, which costs real money. That gets us into the child care crisis and everything else. Again, not to take away from the main thrust of what you're working toward, but these are very important issues to women who are in vulnerable positions.
Well, that's it. And it, you know, abortion has been front and center, but I think most people understand that it isn't just about abortion. It is about a fuller range of healthcare. It is about making our own decisions about bodily autonomy. And it is about exactly as you're talking, as you're asking, it is also about having the ability, you know, to raise your, you know, your child or your children in a healthy environment, and you know, and in a way that you know, that is, you know, that is supported. That, you know, the decision of whether or not to have a child is one of the most personal decisions someone can make, and it's critical that we also, you know, understand there's a responsibility to ensuring that when people do decide to have children, that the children can be raised in a healthy and sustained environment. So that all of these things are inextricable from each other.
Tanya Atkinson, thank you so very much for what you do. Thank you for being a voice, and of course, being on Up North News Radio here with Pat. Frequently, we'll invite you back not only to Up North News, but to Civic Media as well, and be in touch.
please do. And one last thing, want to make sure everybody knows Planned Parenthood Wisconsin's doors remain open across the entire state. Thank you so much.
That is extremely important to say again. Yes, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We're going to talk about some of the reaction from listeners out there who have been putting comments on social media that have been sending us texts as well. But I also wanted to make sure we updated the numbers in case there were any on some of the close legislative races that are out there. And there are still some close races out there that have not yet been decided. And of course, that's when I go to pull it up and find that it's been rather elusive. Here we go. All the state assembly races. And I was starting in numerical order here with the 53rd assembly district, which was, he says, continuing to scroll so fast. Refresh, refresh. I feel like the people last night in the 53rd, Republican Dean Coffert narrowly holding on by just about 300 votes over Dwayne Schakowsky, 50.6% of the vote for him. We also had in the 88th Assembly District, that race was extremely close too. Christy Welch is the Democratic candidate. Ben Franklin is the Republican candidate. And again, Franklin leading by just over 200 votes with 50.3% there. And then finally, there was a closely watched race in the 94th District where incumbent Democrat Steve Doyle appears to have hung on against Ryan Hipsch. But again, the margin is just over 200 votes at 50.3%.
And in the over the state Senate races in District 2, it was Eric Weinberger, the Republican, defeating Kelly Peterson in the second district for state Senate, 64.5% to 35%. Also, other contested races in the 8th congressional district. It appears, although there are not all of the votes have been counted yet, it looks like there might be a couple of outstanding, but the Democratic challenger, Jody Habish-Senekin, receiving 50.8% of the vote to Dewey Strobel, Republican incumbents, 49.2%. We will see what the final results are there, whether there is a recount or not. But for the moment, the Democrats have picked up that seat over Dewey Strobel on that one, Pat.
All right. Taking a look at folks who've sent in notes on the text line, 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. You've got Tom in Jackson saying, too bad Merrick Garland didn't do his job 3 years ago. There's going to be a lot of talk about that. Again, that somebody who essentially planned and tried to execute a coup that was a deadly, violent day in our Capitol was welcomed back into his party, made the nominee, and has now appealed to enough voters to be there. What if Merrick Garland hadn't waited a year or so to really get serious about the investigation into the effort to overturn the 2020 election? There'll be a lot of navel gazing, I guess, about that.
I think there are certainly think there will be.
From Lynn in Economowoc, Pat and Todd, I'm physically sick. I believe the national media magnified Trump's lies, like saying he would not sign a national abortion ban and that many people believed him. There was a lot of back and forth here on the issue of abortion. There are clearly people who are opposed to abortion rights who want to see, as we talked about just now with Tani Atkinson, more resources for women, but still favor the abortion restrictions. And so that is something that's been it's been a contentious topic for 50 plus years. It's just going to stay that way. There were people, again, asking with all the awful things that Trump said, why were people still supporting him? And again, that's for another time. Let me head over to some of the comments on social media here, where, again, it started with, well, one person starts with, say goodbye to America. I don't think I'd go that far necessarily. Another says unbelievable. Another says I'm numb. But then the Trump folks come in and say, such a liberal left-wing group. The people have spoken. Grow up. Let's see. Well, and Randy comes in and says,
I don't think we denied that, did we? The people spoke.
Yeah. Randy comes in and says, the information was there about the economy and prices. The economy was much better. Prices are not controlled by the president. The fact that that they failed to be informed about those facts, blindly listened to Trump on the media, shows we have bigger issues in America. That's one that will always stick with me, is that we have the best economy in the world. We had the best growth. And yet we continue to be lectured to that because prices aren't what they were before the pandemic, that there's something wrong. People want to lose all that wage growth? that we've gotten since the pandemic as well. But again, that's not for them necessarily. It's the Democrats who should have expanded or explained that a little bit better. It's Wednesday, so we normally hear from Todd Alba in our next segment. I can guarantee that's going to happen again on Up North News Radio.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is 93.5 The Tap. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Tom, your thoughts.
I don't believe that people don't know who Trump is at this point, and they have willfully decided to ignore everything he has said in order to vote what they think is the most important thing. And that's what voting is all about. But you can't claim ignorance when it comes time that Trump is going to pull the trigger and do some things that are going to hurt you and your family. That's what's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll go to Matt Nair on Air, where Jane and Greg were this week joined by Todd Alba, host of The Todd Alba Show, to hear about his grandmother, founder of the UW Richland Center campus, now closed, and what her advice was on moving forward in the face of defeat.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide coming to you from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. After the 11 o'clock news, we're switching things around a little bit for this Thursday. Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company will be here to talk sports. Things are not necessarily going so well. And then we'll have Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot at 11:20, get a little forecast. And Joe Zepecki, political consultant, joining us at 11:30 to wrap up the hour. Right now, though, we are joined by our friend and colleague Todd Alba, coming to us from our headquarters in Madison. And Todd, I got your show yesterday as I was driving from Madison back home, and I was so impressed with the story that you shared about your mother. And there's a lot of folks feeling very discouraged and very upset and lost. And I wanted you to come on and share what you shared yesterday, because I thought it was just so beautifully done.
Well, you're still very kind, Jane. I mean, it's very nice of you to say that. I appreciate it. I appreciate more the opportunity to share. Just my mom's going to go, I'm not that old. It's my grandma, but yes, it was.
Oh, your grandma. I'm sorry. I'm sorry,
Mrs. It's my mom's mother. It's mine.
Sorry about that.
No,
Mom Alba.
So, yeah, I mean, I think maybe I've talked a little bit about on your show. I've talked about my maternal grandmother, Marge Wallace, who passed away either 6-ish years ago at the age of 96, and she still had her mental faculties right up until the day that she died. She grew up in a small farm in southwest Wisconsin. I know we have called the caller from Blue River. That's where she was technically blue. The big unincorporated municipality of Blue River.
Blue River, Wisconsin.
Just below the Wisconsin River, where she was born. And my great-grandfather was a very talented carpenter. I still have a piece of furniture that he built, but was from the old school. I mean, his parents immigrated from what now we know as Czechoslovakia, but back then they called it Bohemia. And he didn't believe that women should go get an education beyond eighth grade. So my grandmother left home at 13, moved into the larger municipality of Muscadet, which is about 1,000 people, and she rented an unheated attic and did the couple's laundry and cooked their meals for their kids at 13 so that she could finish high school. And then went on and got her bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville by working her tail off. And then ended up starting out in a one-room schoolhouse at the same time working on her master's degree. And then ultimately it became the president of, they called them county teachers colleges at the time in Wisconsin, is where people went to learn how to be a teacher. It was a 2-year degree. And then she got her did her doctoral work at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So she was a graduate in the master's program at UW and then did her doctoral work. She ended up, long story short, being the first woman to be a dean in Wisconsin at a public university, as she helped create the University of Wisconsin-Richland, which unfortunately is now closed. And at that time, women could not even be on the Board of Regents, and they couldn't even be in the room other than the quote-unquote secretary taking the notes. And so she was a force of nature. She was a behemoth. She fit the stereotype. She was big boned and loud.
Solid.
And sturdy. Stubborn like a mule. And if she believed in something, she could also be extraordinarily loving and compassionate and kind. But you did not want to get on the other side of what she thought was right. And she actually recruited at the time, I think it was late 60s, 70s, went to Milwaukee and recruited people of color to come to Richland Center because she said, we can give you a 2-year associate degree, house you, and do it cheaper in Richland Center than you can in Milwaukee. And she got black people to come from Milwaukee to Richland Center to get their higher education at the time. And it also gave people Richland Center, which was 99.9% white, hey, we actually have an opportunity to have exposure and learn from people of different cultures and people of color. And but when she was doing this, getting it passed to have the 2-year campus, she went down to the Board of Regents meeting in Madison, and she stood outside the door, and she looked at these people, and this is one of her, this is how she talked. She said, I have got to get into that meeting. And the guys in the room, the Board of Regents, they hear her voice, and they'd say, is that Marge Wallace?
Oh, no. Yep.
Well, send her in.
Ah!
And she literally, not by physical force, but just by pure sheer
will.
Determination, will, that's a good word, forced herself into this room and got them to approve the campus at Richland Center. And thus is how it began. And I thought of her and how much you would have wanted a woman to be president, I'm sure, because I know when Hillary ran, she was like, wouldn't it just be something if she got elected? And so I'm pretty confident in saying she would have wanted Vice President Harris to win. But I also know that if when it didn't happen, she would have looked me in the eyes and said, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
And to not give up. And I think that's the message for everyone, is not give up. Jimmy Valvano in that great speech, dying of cancer, never give up. Never, ever give up.
Yes. Yes.
What a powerhouse she was. What a remarkable role model she was. And an inspiration, I think, for all of us. Yeah. We can all take something away from that. Look at the odds that she had to overcome. Did that completely fracture her relationship with her father?
No. In fact, when she became president of the teachers' college, he drove up there. She went and got him and took her to her office about 20 miles away off the farm. And he was not a man of emotion. And he cried. And he said, well, Margie, I was wrong.
There you go.
Seamen, you can do it.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that, Todd. For folks who are listening, I encourage you to go back and listen to Todd's show from yesterday. You will find it at civicmedia.us. Just click on all shows. Todd Allbaugh, catch him today coming up at noon. Thank you so very much, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
Stay with us. News is next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of this...
93.5 The Tap. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we're all about Madison as I welcome comedian Johnny Beaner back to the show, and then WMDX morning show radio legends John Peterson and Gordy Young join the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Wisconsin Decides 2024, and this is the only place you received election results from across the state live.
And you're responding to our coverage.
I just want to thank you for being there for us.
Wisconsin is not people that are sore losers.
Oh, no matter what happens, there will be a tomorrow, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Here for you after the election or any time.
Real news and great conversation on 93.5 The Tap and the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming